order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Jay.
Here.
Randy.
Here.
Mark.
Here.
Eric.
Here.
Jeff.
Here.
Kurt.
Present.
Nancy.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a full assembly tonight. It's now time for the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, next thing on the agenda is awards presentation. So, Officer Hamilton.
Lift it up, I wonder. Mike.
Mandy Smythe, please step forward.
Captain, would you like this to be a little higher?
Thank you. On May 5th, 2017, an apartment fire was reported at the Narrows Inn in Petersburg, Alaska. After learning of the fire, Mandy Smythe ran to the apartment to attempt to extinguish the fire and rescue the occupant. He displayed great personal courage and disregard for his personal safety by twice entering the apartment full of dense toxic smoke and burning bedding. He removed a burning mattress and search for the occupant prior to first responders arriving on the scene. But for his selfless actions, the severely injured occupant would not have survived. Please join me in congratulating Mandy Smythe on this citizen's. Celio Escatelli. Yes, he wasn't able to come tonight, but I'll go ahead and read this citation anyway. On May 5th, 2017, an apartment fire was reported at the Narrows Inn in Petersburg, Alaska. After learning of the fire, Mr. Escatel joined another individual in running to the apartment, which was filled with dense toxic smoke and burning bedding. Using brute strength, he forced the door open, allowing entry for the attempt to locate the occupant within. Mr. Escatel showed great personal courage and disregard for his personal safety in gaining access to a burning apartment and providing support in the attempt to extinguish the fire and locate the injured residents. Without his assistance, the severely injured occupant would not have survived. Please join me in congratulating Mr. Celio Escatel on this Citizen Certificate of Merit. Shauna Rossi, is she here? On May 5th, 2017, an apartment fire was reported at the Narrows Inn in Petersburg, Alaska. Officer Rossi, who's not here tonight and is represented by his son, and other officers were the initial responders on scene. Assuming a leadership role, he twice entered the apartment, which was full of dense toxic smoke with extremely limited visibility, before locating the severely injured occupant. Leading another officer, he entered the apartment a third time and completed the rescue. But for his intrepidity and disregard for his personal safety, the occupant would have suffered further possible fatal injuries. Please join me in congratulating Officer Callan Rossi on this medal. On May 5th, 2017, an apartment fire was reported at the Narrows Inn in Petersburg, Alaska. Officer Tate and other officers were the initial responders on the scene. Officer Tate provided assistance during the first two entries into the apartment. Once the occupant was located, he then entered the apartment full of dense toxic smoke with limited visibility with another officer and rescued the severely injured occupant. But for his intrepidity and disregard for his personal safety, the occupant would have suffered further possible fatal injuries. Please join me in congratulating Officer Carl Tate on this Medal of Valor. Officer Derek Forson. On May 5, 2017, an apartment fire was reported at the Narrows Inn in Petersburg, Alaska. Officer Torson and other officers were the initial first responders on scene. After assessing the situation, he took the timely action of breaking the front plate glass window to reduce the level of dense toxic smoke and increasing visibility, enabling a search for the occupant. His foresight and continued assistance to the other officers resulted in the successful rescue of the severely injured occupant. He then continued in his efforts to ensure occupants had exited the building and were accounted for. But for his intrepidity and disregard for his personal safety, the occupant would have suffered further possible fatal injuries. Please join me in congratulating Officer Derek Torson on this Distinguished Service Medal. Now I have some other presentations to hand out here. Alaska has an organization called the Alaska Police Standards Council, and their job is to set the training requirements and standards for the hiring and retention of police officers throughout the state. The state has three levels of certification, and police officers must receive one of these levels of certification in order to work as an officer in the state. Within the first 18 months, they have to at least obtain a basic certificate. With continuing education, training, and experience, officers can attain higher levels of certification, and that assists them in furthering their career. As an example, one of the requirements that we have for chief of police here is an advanced certificate, which Chief Swihart got about 10 years ago. Sergeant Jim Kerr. Presenting Sergeant Kerr with his advanced certificate and his intermediate certificate from the Alaska Police Standards Council, which was signed by Chief Swihart, who is the chairman of the Alaska Police Standards Council. Investigator Pop. Investigator Pop has been with us about 11 years now, and he recently got the requisite training and experience. He has now been issued an intermediate certificate by the APSC. Officer Lewis Wachter. Officer Wachter has completed the Basic Police Academy. He completed that back in November, and he has worked the requisite 12 consecutive months with a single agency, and he has now got his basic certificate from the APSC.
Okay, very good. Thanks. Good job, everyone. Next item on the agenda is there's approval of minutes. There's no minutes for approval at this meeting, so I would imagine we'll see those at our next regular meeting. Item five, we'll take a short break and wait for people to clear out.
Oh, I was afraid that we're here because there's the keyboard.
I knew we should have charged admission right when they came in and would have been better off. Okay, that brings us to item five on this evening's agenda, and that item is amendment and approval of tonight's meeting agenda. Entertain a motion to approve that. Member Walhuter.
Mr. Mayor, I really hate to add one more thing to the agenda, but under discussion items, I want to just read one little paragraph into the record on the original ordinance of 1980 for the senior citizen sales tax exemption. That might clear up a little bit of air here, so I'll make it really brief.
Okay, remind me.
Okay.
I might be tired by then. So, is there any other amendments to tonight's meeting agenda? We'll add one under borough discussion items or assembly discussion items, so entertain them, or a roll call vote to approve tonight's assembly meeting agenda as amended. Are all those in favor, say aye.
I was going to say, we didn't even have a motion, so.
So move.
Second.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, now we have, okay. So we'll move forward with the meeting agenda as amended. Public hearings, there are six public hearings tonight. So if anybody in the audience wants to participate in these public hearings or have discussion on these the six ordinances that we're going to go over, most of them for the restructuring, now's the time to put your opinions forward. But I guess if you forget something later in the agenda, there's visitors' views related to items on the agenda. You could also add something there if you would like. So don't be afraid to get up and speak at either one. So the first public hearing this evening is on ordinance 2018-04. And that's an ordinance amending chapter 3.08 of the municipal code entitled Assembly and Mayor to add agenda formation language and to amend the deadline for submission of items to be included on an agenda. Is there anybody this evening that would like to participate in this public hearing? Seeing none, we'll move to the second public hearing. And this is public hearing for ordinance 2018-05. This is an ordinance amending chapter 14.16 of the municipal code entitled Electricity to amend the title to Electric Utility to provide for a utility director as head of the Electric Utility Department and to establish fines for violations of provisions of chapter 14.16. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to under the public hearing for this ordinance?
Question?
Yes?
Is that ordinance right there concerning Carl Hergman?
Restructuring.
It's considering restructuring, so you wouldn't have a public power light superintendent. You would have a, so that was the time to talk about that. And it's, these other four or five kind of hit on the same.
I want to make sure that I get a chance to briefly speak.
Now's the time. Now's the time.
But as you can see, I came semi-unprepared. No piece of paper, no nothing. Oh, yes. My name is Nathan Midkiff. I'm the head electrician down at Icicle Seafoods, Petersburg, Alaska. I've been working there as an electrician for roughly 40 years. And over time, I have seen, you work somewhere for 40 years, of course, you see people, you start with people that are extremely knowledgeable within the plant. I can hear myself just fine, but thank you. And over time, I have observed and I have watched people with knowledge retire, quit, out of PFI, whether it be Stan Reed, Dennis Jones, Bill Haley, lots of people that on the mechanical end that have retired out. They have not always been replaced. I said not always, with the same caliber of person. When that happens, what happens is somebody else has to pick that slack up. That's going to fall on whoever's capable of doing it. It's also nice as a worker to be able to go up and to talk to somebody about an issue that you're having and to have that person understand what you're talking about. Now, I understand budget restraints. I run a household. I have a wife, I have kids. I understand budget restraints. I understand that everybody needs to cut, and at some point you do have to cut. I understand that. But I don't think this is the time. not in this position. So I stand opposed to the reorganization as it so stands. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Midgift. So is there anyone else in the audience that would like to participate in the public hearing? Ma'am, and then Robert after that. Please state your name and who you represent for the record. Thank you.
I'm going to be too tall now.
My name is Candy Woodworth, and I live at 848 Mitkoff Highway. I moved to Yuma, Arizona, and I have been a permanent resident in Petersburg since 2015. I would like to express my feelings regarding the borough's inclination to accept Carl Hagerman as the electrical superintendent. I believe that a relationship is being promoted by the borough that is resembling favoritism. There has been in place for 25 years the very specific qualifications for the electrical department head, the electrical superintendent position. Joe, who met those very specific qualifications and held that position for years, has retired. Now I believe it was the city manager that has handpicked a certain individual without any electrical experience, I might add, to fill the electrical superintendent position. But there was a problem. The very specific job description must be rewritten and dumbed down to match this certain individual's experience. Even with the rewritten job description, I don't believe this position was posted for others to apply. It was under the radar, so to speak. These actions may not be illegal, but despicably unethical. This creates a situation that is hazardous to honest accountability in the future for the Bureau, for the borough, if the position was obtained as a favor. It goes by the name of good old boy relationship. And in politics and in government, the strings of partiality should not be attached, especially when it is a department head. Think about it. A department head should be unbiased, making their recommendations to the borough for the good of the community. You will be hard-pressed to convince me that Carl will not owe a favor or that the city manager won't have extra influence over the electrical department.
It'd be better if you would give your testimony and not mention individuals' names. At this point, we don't have anybody specifically picked for this position, so
okay.
I would appreciate it if you could do that.
I stand corrected.
Thank you.
I bring this to the borough's attention because I experienced... I was an owner of a underground utility company in Yuma, Arizona for 30 years before I moved here. And I saw it develop like this in the city of Yuma departments over that 30 years that I lived in Yuma. It gave the city a terrible reputation within the community and caused infighting within the city departments. Before I close, I would like to also remind you of one more item. The Electrical Enterprise Fund. Today, it is funded for the electrical infrastructure and other electrical associated items. That is all. I want all the citizens of Petersburg to keep a watchful eye on this fund. Its millions of dollars should not be usurped or dipped into for the general fund or any other project. The inexperienced individual that is being promoted for the electrical superintendent position as a department head may not understand completely the importance of maintaining this fund for future electrical upgrades to the community. Thank you for your consideration. Respectfully submitted by myself, and I represent myself. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else? Robert, you're next. And during your testimony, if you would not name any individuals, and right now we're just talking about changing some wording, and there's no specific names associated with that in any of these ordinances, but thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I won't be mentioning any names.
Can you state your name, please?
My name is Robert Larson. I've been a resident of Petersburg for 33 years. And I would like to share some thoughts on reorganization regarding the electrical department. I consider myself a knowledgeable person. I was a member of the Thomas Bay Power Authority for many years. Last year as its president, the chair of that body. We were charged with providing for operations and maintenance of the Tyee Lake hydroelectric plant, plus the intertie between Wrangell and Petersburg. If you look at the documents transferring the responsibility to SEPA, you'll see my signature down at the bottom, in addition to other ones. I am also Petersburg's past voting member on the board for SEPA. I enjoyed that experience very much. I've also been a member of a labor management council that represented the interests of over 600 employees, professional, technical, and administrative folks in administering provisions of a labor management contract. That experience has provided me with a good working knowledge of the roles and responsibilities, not only of our employees, but of managers and management itself. I'm concerned that the Assembly has downplayed the primary purpose of the head of the electrical department. I would like to couch the next little bit of a discussion in terms of risk management. Where is the risk, and where is the primary purpose of the department and the person that leads this department? I think we all agree the electrical department provides an essential service that's critical to this community. We have to have dependable electricity. Most aspects of the daily operations and decisions regarding maintenance, planning, and coordination of actions with Wrangell — we're joined with Wrangell because of our power sales agreement — are technical in nature. For example, at every SEPA meeting or the meeting of the Thomas Bay Power Authority, Joe Nelson, my only reference to a person, provided valuable knowledge and advice that contributed to the safe and efficient delivery of electrical service to these two communities. And I would extend that through the SEPA program to the community of Ketchikan. So, in the proposed action, 2018-05 is what I'm speaking to specifically, I do not see who's responsible for deciding whether an electrical line should be placed above ground or underground, whether it should be designed to have 100 volts or 100,000 volts. Is these instrumentations and switches, are these analog or are they digital? There's a huge, an unlimited source of daily decisions that are made by the electrical superintendent that provide for the safe, effective distribution of electricity in this town. The borough is lucky to have a well-trained electrical crew. They expect and they deserve direction from somebody that truly is aware of the needs and requirements of our electrical distribution system. In summary, I'd like to reiterate that the primary purpose of the head of the electrical department is technical in nature, and a person with appropriate experience and training in this field is necessary. If we decide, you decide to have a utility director, that's your choice, but I would recommend so forcefully that the requirements of understanding and being familiar with an electrical distribution system be paramount in that job description. because that is the most critical function. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Larson, for your comments. Yeah, March? Yeah, and should be a little aware of the time, and I haven't been keeping time in these testimonies, but if you could limit it to 5 minutes as by code, we'd like to have it three, but I'll kind of keep an eye on the clock. Thanks. State your name, Marge.
My name is Marge Oinas, and I'm a single woman that lives in a very old house. And my dad worked on electrical issues for the city and for Tyee for a good portion of his life. And I will fix my own electrical problems until I get scared. And then I call an electrician. The electrician who did come to fix something said, I have never seen in an old house an electrical system that is as good as this. And I said, well, that was my dad. And I know that he was extremely concerned and interested in the whole electrical aspect of Petersburg. And so I have also been following in the paper people that write concerning to the editor concerning this electrical issue. And I started out agreeing with what the council was going to do to hire someone without the training or whatever, if that's good enough.
That's, yeah.
But after last week's paper, I thought, you know what? I'm changing my mind. I think we should go with what Mr. Larson has said, that you should not consider, that you should consider seriously hiring someone with training.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, Marjorie. And you have extra minutes next time because you stayed under your time. Anybody else in the audience that would like to testify under the public hearing for Ordinance 2018-05? Okay. Excuse me for the cold here. That public hearing is now closed. And we'll move to public hearing for Ordinance 2018-06. This is an ordinance amending Chapter 1404 of the Municipal Code entitled Water to amend the title to Water Utility to provide for a utility director as head of the Water Utility Department and to establish fines for violations of provisions of this chapter. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify under this public hearing? Okay, seeing no interest, we'll move on to item D under public hearings, and that's a public hearing for Ordinance 2018-07, an ordinance amending Chapter 14.08 of the Municipal Code entitled Sewer to amend the title to Sewer Utility to provide for a utility director as head of the Sewer Utility Department and to establish fines for violations of provisions of Chapter 14.08. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify under this public hearing? Seeing none, we'll move to the next public hearing, which is item E. This is a public hearing for Ordinance 2018-08, an ordinance providing for Chapter 3.76 of the Municipal Code entitled Administrative Officers and Appeals Process, updating current language to reflect borough incorporation. Is there anybody interested in testifying? Seeing none, we'll move to the next public hearing, item E. This is a public hearing for Ordinance 2018-08, an ordinance providing for Chapter 3.76 of the Municipal Code entitled Administrative Officers and Appeals Process, updating current language to reflect borough incorporation. Seeing no interest, we'll move to item F, and that's a public hearing for Ordinance 2018-09, an ordinance amending Chapter 3.38 of the Municipal Code entitled Public Works Department to remove operation responsibilities for the water utility and sewer utility from the Public Works Director duties. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to participate in this public hearing? Seeing none, we'll move to item G. And that's a public hearing for Ordinance 2018-10, an ordinance amending Chapter 3.40 of the Municipal Code entitled Electric Utility to amend the title to Electric Utility, Water Utility, and Sewer Utility Departments and to provide for the three utilities to be the operation responsibilities of the Utility Director. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify under this public hearing? Okay, seeing none, public hearings for the evening are closed. Excuse me again. That moves us to item 7, bid awards. There are no, pardon, are you going to read those four letters in under the
visitor's views?
Okay, on the next, all right. There are no bid awards. The next item on the agenda is visitors' views related to items on this evening's agenda. Is there anyone in the audience that has any views related to items on the agenda? Okay, we'll start with Mr. Gilliland. Can you please step forward and state your name and who you represent, Harvey?
Harvey Gilliland, and I represent myself. I've gone back and forth a number of times trying to decide if I wanted to visit you again about the senior tax exemption cards, but I've had a number of people tell me that they liked my input previously, so here I am again to pester you some more. I don't want to see our town fail fiscally, and as I've said before, I don't mind paying my share. A week or so before speaking at your last meeting, I talked to Jody Tao. We visited about a number of things related to taxation, from my view of a need for a state income tax, which could help communities as well as the state, a partial remedy by a higher sales tax cap, which Jody reminded me failed by a large margin not long ago, and finally the reason for my visit, that of the senior exemption card. Please forgive me, Jody, if I'm off base, but I came away with the impression that renewing the exemption cards every year is just the way it's always been done, and there's evidently a large concern about my card being out there after I kick the bucket. Because of my work long ago, often taking me to Juneau, I got a sales tax exemption card from the city and borough of Juneau. And it was because I was eligible because I lived out of town. It didn't have an expiration date. I don't know if they still have that policy. I finally threw that card away recently when cleaning out my wallet. 20 years ago, when I became 60, I got a free trapping, hunting, and sport fishing license, which does not expire. I have an FCC amateur radio license that's good for 10 years at a time. Also, even my Alaska driver's license is good for 5 years. If I die tomorrow, my license is still out there. It seems like none of my heirs or anyone else would even try to utilize those licenses or privileges after I die. Also, you started out talking about charging seniors $60 for a card that's said to cost that much to produce, then bumped it up to $100. If it actually costs $60, then the general fund coffers would only gain $40. With a phone call, I learned that there are currently 559 senior exemption cards. So each year, to renew the cards, there's an expense of $33,540. It seems to me that that amount could be saved every year by either the seniors or the town if the cards did not need to be renewed. When most everyone, including the town, has budget problems, it doesn't make sense to spend unnecessarily. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gilliland. And I believe there were some other hands up in the audience. Marge, do you want to, or how about we go, Bob, you want to come up and testify? Well, Mr. Martin, I should say, can you please state your name and who you represent?
I'm Bob Martin. I'm here with the Harbor Board. We lost our chairman. Very sorry to say that, and sorry to be here under those circumstances. I'd like to talk about item J on the agenda, the petro land trade. And it's spelled out very well in the packet. The harbor master has created a document about all the maintenance needs and the need for secure storage space, dry space, sometimes heated space. And right now, the maintenance staff works out of some connexes and various parking lots and storage areas, and it's gotten us by, but it's not a good long-term solution. It's not good for crew morale and crew efficiency, and we're in the maintenance of our harbors for the long run, so I think it's time to look really closely at this land swap with Petro. It would give us a building. It's not luxurious by any means, but it's more than adequate, and if you compare it to the cost of building new, I think it's a good deal, a good opportunity that won't be there forever. And Harbor Board was unanimously for it. We've been for it in the past, and I hope you'll give it a good look and listen to what Harbor Master has to say when it comes up. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Martin, for your testimony. Okay, Mr. Lynch.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Assembly members. My name is Brian Lynch. I've been a Petersburg resident since 1981. I have about four items here I'd like to briefly discuss. First one is 16C, the DNR letter to the concerning the land transfer to Petersburg. Since a disclosure here, I sit on the Petersburg Economic Development Council, and we talked about and we passed on this letter as it is right now. And it is a good letter. It gets to the point, but something I brought up during the meeting, I didn't think was forceful enough. I look at what is being done here as actually a breach of trust by DNR, and maybe even getting a little more hardcore. It may even be basically a lie by omission. Now, granted, they have been developing this plan for logging these areas for a while, and it isn't going to take effect for about 4 years, but they should have informed us. And I really, hopefully you send this letter on to DNR, and I would even recommend to be even more forceful whether or not you do that. I think the letter is adequate right now, but I think they need to be put on notice that what they were doing was is just wrong. The next one is senior citizens tax exempt issue 15A. I actually agree with the ordinance. I do understand. I would like to personally like to see it $100, but I understand the idea of it being taxation any higher than 60. Regardless of what you do with this, something at some point, maybe even more drastic, is going to have to be done here. We're losing about, as you well know, about $300,000 a year based on this, and that's a lot of money. And what I would like to do tonight basically is appeal to people like myself, and also a disclosure, I turn 65 at the end of March, so whatever you do here and whatever is done will affect me. I would like to appeal to everybody such as myself who can afford to pay your sales tax to please do so. You know, there's a lot of people here that, you know, they leave this town for a long period of time on recreational purposes and whatnot, and they can afford to do that, I think. And at some point, I hope to be going on longer excursions, you know, on a vacation and whatnot. But I really would like to appeal to people to do this. I mean, we get situations where you have water shortages. They ask for voluntary reduction in water use, and normally citizens, you know, stand up and do what's necessary. We have a revenue shortage, and I would really like to see people who can afford to do so pay your sales tax, regardless of if you have a senior citizens exemption or even if you pass this ordinance. Marine passengers fee 15B. I encourage passage of this. I don't think you really should be all that worried about the Juneau lawsuit. From what I understand, that had to do more with how the money was being spent. I think if you're very specific about how you're going to spend this money, I don't think you're going to run into a problem. In fact, it's kind of interesting. I do these dock walks for the small cruise ships that come through here and guiding visitors around the docks, explaining the fisheries and the vessels and whatnot. whatnot. And I can't say for sure, but I think a lot of these people would actually agree with a passenger's fee. In fact, a lot of them would probably think we're stupid for not collecting a fee on them. And if it's $5, that's good enough. And I think that would fill a bill. Last one, 16B, Open Meetings Act. I don't really want to see you go to a second opinion here. I don't want you wasting the taxpayers' money getting a second opinion from an attorney. And if you don't trust your attorney, then maybe add a fireman and get a new one. What you really should do is develop a policy for the use of emails, texts, etc. And I think if you do that, you're going to avoid running into a problem. But I would suggest, rather than getting another opinion, take the attorney's opinion and realize there probably are some vagaries in there, in the laws, but develop a policy so you all and future assemblies know what is required of them, possibly even get some training on that through AML or whatever. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn. Is there anybody else in the audience with views related to the agenda?
Good evening. My name is Janet Holton, and I am representing myself. I would like to speak to item 16D, resolution number 2018-06, a resolution setting regular borough assembly meeting start times to 6 p.m. And I hadn't planned on being here tonight because after seeing seven public hearings ahead of item 8 and considering that the weather report was going to be snow dumping on us all day, I had prepared this for Debbie to read, but it turned out I could be here, and so I want to speak to this, so thank you. I am not in favor of resolution 2018-06. I don't attend very many assembly meetings, but when I do, I prefer to take time off during the day rather than the evening to attend, because my evenings, they're often jam-packed, and Mondays in particular. So having the opportunity to at least listen to a meeting during the daytime is of great value to me. I really value knowing what's going on and being able to at least listen to a meeting if I can't attend. And I don't get those opportunities at night. When this section of the code was set, it allowed for both day and night meetings for travel safety purposes for people that were off Mitkoff Island. And in light of our snowstorm that didn't occur, you know, I believe that these dual times benefit more than just the residents who live off the island. And it's I don't think that was probably the only intent, was that they would be able to attend day meetings. I think it benefits a lot of people to have the opportunity to either, you know, listen to a daytime meeting or attend, you know, as they choose. And my situation is unique to me, and there are over 3,000 other residents of the borough that have their own unique set of circumstances. Please consider what is best for as many as you can when determining this time change. And thank you for your service to the borough and for this opportunity to express my views.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience wants to testify? you could lower it down, Joel, if you want.
It's a great spot there. Thank you for the opportunity to comment, Mr. Mayor and Borough Assembly. I come and ask for support.
Name, please, and who you
represent. Oh, I'm sorry, Joel Rander, speaking for myself. Commercial fisherman, live in Petersburg here for most of my life, 52 years. I'm asking that you have support for the commercial fishing fleet and the sea otter. I know you're going to discuss that later in a meeting, but it's come before the board before, or the borough assembly, excuse me, before, and I'd like you to see move past that quickly and not get bogged down in meetings if you're going to have a meeting about it. The reason is, it seems that the time is now to to comment on that, and I asked that you either come up with an action letter or a resolution or whatever action you may seem necessary to do that. But I just attended Board of Fish this last January of this year in Sitka, and it was in two parts. One was shellfish portion at first, and the second was finfish. And the fishermen are coming to the board now as a cry for help and getting something done. And not so much as trying to limit themselves or limit time and area for fisheries, but just telling the board that time is coming where we're not going to have any more areas to work on. The sea otter is a very aggressive species, and no one is advocating for extermination of the entire species, but we do need to have a management plan put in place. The House and Senate just came out with resolutions. I don't know if you've kept up with that or read those. They're a pretty good read, and getting more to the heart of the problem is not having a management plan for this aggressive predator in our ecosystem and the effects of that. I also might turn you to some of the notes from the Board of Fish meeting. One of them is RC. It's a record copy is what that stands for, 23 from Mike Lockerbie and Wrangell. And it's very well done. Has a lot of data and a lot of federal data. It's not just his own opinion on things. He was also at the Board of Fish meeting there in Sitka. So I know that I haven't seen the letters, and I know there has been some letters sent in to the borough here. I know there was one letter I heard that was in disapproval of it, and I would hope that we could come to an agreement with individuals that may have a disagreement so we can move forward with this species that is having a devastating effect, and not just the commercial fisheries, but all user groups, subsistence, personal use. There's areas that are very affected by the sea otter, and they continue to move, and as fishermen, anecdotally, we're seeing them move further and further into other grounds. So thank you very much for your time. That's all I have. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Rander, for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify on your views related to the agenda?
My name is Bob Lynn. In this case, I'm representing myself. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Assembly. I want to talk about 2018-06, and I hadn't thought about it until Janet was here. But when this borough was created, it was intended at the time by that assembly to provide opportunity for both people inside and outside of Service Area 1 to come before this group. By having both meetings in the evening, that makes it really, really hard for anybody that lives outside of Service Area 1, whether it be at Papke's Landing, across the water, or out in Duncan Canal, to make the meeting. And I'll use myself as an example. To come to this meeting tonight, I started out about noon to come here. I can't go home because of the water out there, and it's pretty doggone dark. And so I have to find a place overnight. Luckily, I have one. And I've heard a number of other folks say the same thing. They won't come in at night because of the same situation I ran. Plus, they don't have a place to stay. Along with that, I've heard a number of us talk about, well, we never have anybody from outside Service Area 1 come here. Well, really? Well, let's put that a little bit in perspective. In my mind, we have, 170 people outside Service Area 1 that are residents, and we have 2,800 in here. So that means, in my mind, that if we have one person from outside in here, then we should at least have 16 or 17 in here. Have we had it when I was here? I think so. But if you remember back, a lot of those issues we had during the day when people from outside Service Area 1 showed up. The last thing I'd like to talk about is that in the preamble to our charter, we talk specifically in there about creating an atmosphere where, and I want to quote a little bit on this, this charter provides to maximum public participation in borough decision-making processes. If you put both meetings at night, then to my mind, then you've taken the minority that are outside of town and putting them at a lesser value than those inside of town or inside Service Area 1. So my recommendation to you is keep it like it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn. Is there anyone else in the audience with views related to the agenda? Marge?
My name is Mara Joynas. I'm speaking for myself. And after listening to Bob, I'd like to speak to what he spoke to. I wasn't planning to, but I love it when I get convinced about something that I was feeling the other way about. I just read about having the meetings at night, and I thought, yippee, much easier. After listening to Bob, I think, no, I think we should keep it the same, because he really had something good to say. And saying that, this idea of being able to change our minds, I hate to bring this up, but in talking about the senior citizen tax issue, it seems like, though we come and share things with the council, which is really a wonderful privilege, it's like there isn't any way to get you to change your mind from the direction you're kind of heading. And it's kind of discouraging. And it sort of seems like, well, we're being invited to share in something that's futile. And I just want to say that, and I hope that along the way, somewhere along the line, you can change your minds on some of the ideas that you have, and one of which is the senior tax. I really like Harvey Gilliland's idea. If the issue is saving money by processing, his idea to give you one card is fantastic. And I think, but maybe that's not the real issue. The issue is not to save, but to get more money. And so charging $100 and just every year, that's a way to get more money. So I'm thinking, I wish that you would be more transparent in your thinking or sharing with, that what you really want is more money. And that's okay. But instead of saying reducing the processing charges, just say we want more money. And after listening to, I forget who it was, he was talking about, I hope that all the seniors or whoever would be willing to pay their taxes. I thought, I would give my card up if the idea on this elect, if my card and not using it would save enough money to hire someone with electrical, superintendent electrical skills. I know it doesn't mean anything as far as amount, but that's another idea. So my one last question is, it's a bribe. In the senior tax exemption thing, under in the red on page 2, it talks about the card fee will be waived to a senior citizen that has signed an affidavit at the borough finance office attesting that they are 65 years and older, or older, is a permanent resident of the borough, and all combined household income does not exceed $20,000. I just really wish you could define what household is, because I live alone and have often thought of getting in a roommate to live with me to save on costs. So if that roommate happens to be rich and they have a super income in retirement, does that mean that my what I bring in at $1,400 a month and what she brings in at whatever amount, you combine that total and then therefore I could not have a senior tax card? Does that what that household means?
I'm not sure what the definition of household is, Marge, and maybe we could get that answer from the clerk, but then we need to move on to the next person.
I can answer that, I guess. That's how it's written right now. It's copied from the Water, Wastewater, and Sanitation Ordinance on how to qualify for a half off of your base fee if you're a low-income senior. So we just took the wording from that. So Yeah, currently that's how that's written. It can be changed, but currently what's in there, you're correct.
So it isn't a husband and wife with one Social Security. It'd be whoever lives there, you combine their total income. That's what it means right
yes,
now.
Yes, unless you had a definition for household as something else.
Well, that's something you guys would have to choose, right?
Correct. We could amend ordinance to, or I don't know how we would approach it.
I guess that before you vote to take this, I would request that you define what household is so that you're not voting on something you don't know what you're voting on.
Okay, I think that was the definition, but... Thank you, Marge.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience with visitors' views related to the agenda tonight?
My name is Bob Zimke, and I'm representing myself. Sorry, I didn't have a statement prepared. I don't have anything prepared. I'm shooting from the hip, basically. May of last year, Joe Nelson announced his retirement. There was not much done as far as finding his replacement then. June, he retired. There wasn't very little done to find a replacement at that time. The election happened. Pretty much the general public stated what they wanted to see out of, or as far as the superintendent went. The vote of the people, which you represent, was for a superintendent, more or less, not directly, but more or less, the people wanted to see a superintendent. That didn't happen. Just earlier today, there was a I heard an assemblyman had mentioned that lost my train of thought. So I'd like to see a work session. You could at least have a work session for this issue to whether or not there should be a superintendent. Or there should be. There has never been a work session for this. Why hasn't this been completed? That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zimke. Anyone else in the audience with views related to items on this evening's agenda? Please state your name and who you represent.
Yeah, my name is Adam Day, and I represent myself. This is in regards to Power and Light restructure. There's been a lot of people that have weighed in on this restructuring, some that are concerned citizens, some that are business owners, some that are very qualified and experienced in the field that is going to be under discussion here tonight. Coupled with that, there's a plethora of letters that have been submitted by professionals that have spent their lives in the field of electrical utilities. As assembly members, it's your responsibility to answer to the people that have voted you in to the position you hold. I won't pretend to understand the pressures that come from that responsibility. I thank you for the time and the commitment to what you do for this town and its people. That being said, this topic of restructuring is no small matter. This could potentially change things for a long time to come for the people of this community. To think that you, as council members, should not seriously evaluate this decision being made based on what you're hearing from all of these sources I've spoke of about here would be doing a disservice to the people who put you in the position you're in and a disservice to this community. I would assume that according to the votes of the assembly that there are quite a few people in this community and people with knowledge and expertise in this field saying this is a good idea. But thus far, the majority of people, citizens, and professionals that have spoken are saying don't do this. It's not a good idea. I encourage the assembly to truly consider whether this is a good thing for this community based on feedback of the community and on the concerns of the professionals. Anything less would, again, be a disservice to this community. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience with views related to items on this evening's agenda? Oh.
Sorry. I have to do them in order.
That works. Thank you.
Please state your name and who you represent.
My name is TJ Daw. I represent myself. Also, I'm an electrical contractor here in Petersburg. I own Nordic Electric. I just want to say I'm in opposition to this restructuring. There is a lot of talk that's been not just managing power distribution and whatnot. There's a secondary side from the pole to the house. And when that happens, you have the National Electric Code, which I am governed by, and that's what I go by. I have 16 hours a year of continuing education to keep up on this. It's anywhere from grounding, ampacities, wire sizes, etc. I just want to make it known that, you know, this is my livelihood, and this is a huge deal. And thank you guys for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Daw, for your testimony. Anyone else in the audience with views related to items on this evening's agenda? I'll ask one more time after the clerk reads these letters into the record.
I have 5 letters to read, and I'm going to read them in the order that I received them. The first one is from Cruise Line Agencies of Alaska. Dear Mayor Jensen, thank you for the opportunity to comment on the proposed $5 per passenger fee currently under consideration by the Borough Assembly. Generally, the industry does not oppose local communities raising revenues for services. What is important is how those funds are used. We recognize that hosting cruise passengers requires harbor facilities, and the proposed ordinance is one of several methods which could be utilized. However, we encourage careful consideration of the following points. The proposed ordinance is estimated to raise only a very small amount of funds for the borough. It seems the administration of the fee with verifying ship manifests and the collecting audit of the fee will not be worth the time and cost. Additional costs do impact cruise operations, and as we have seen in Alaska, passenger fees can have an impact upon local business. If the fee adds costs without a benefit to the ship, ships could decide to not call the port, subjecting the borough to not only the loss of the fee, but additional sales as well. The better policy is to work with the industry and encourage ship visits so more sales tax revenue can be realized. Cruise Line Agencies of Alaska works with several small ships that are slightly over the 250 passenger minimum to trigger payment of the $34.50 state passenger fee. For these vessels, $5 per passenger per port is shared to each community by the state of Alaska. Under this ordinance, these ships would pay the borough twice. The ordinance language is problematic as well. Of the 1,000-plus ports cruise lines operate around the world, the Borough of Petersburg selected language from the one community which is currently being challenged in court. The broad nature of the proposed ordinance to allow for funding of services to passengers and not just vessels is at the heart of the legal debate between Cruise Lines International Association Alaska and the City and Borough of Juneau. Regardless of the Assembly's view on the Juneau litigation, it is not prudent to adopt such broad language that will most likely be determined to go further than federal law and the U.S. Constitution permits. Cruise Line Agencies of Alaska recognizes that dock infrastructure is a necessary and legitimate expenditure for the industry. We work with port communities across Southeast to help match the level of visitation desired with infrastructure that best accommodates the vessels. From our experience working in the industry, we recommend you table the ordinance and work with the industry to narrow the focus of the language or craft an acceptable dock fee which could assist with your harbor infrastructure. Thank you for your consideration. Rick Erickson, Cruise Line Agencies of Alaska. This is from Dave Carlson. Dear Mayor Jensen and Assembly members, I recently became aware of your discussions to reorganize Petersburg Power and Light and appoint Carl Hagerman as a part-time director of Petersburg's electric utility. I believe this is a very risky and foolhardy move. Let me explain. Petersburg has been extremely fortunate to have had two very capable and highly qualified power and light superintendents over the past 35 or so years. Dennis Lewis was hired in the early 1980s and was followed by Joe Nelson some 20 years later. Both Dennis and Joe's contributions were immense. Without Dennis and Joe's thorough knowledge of the complexity and nuances of electric generation, transmission, and distribution, things might look extremely different in Petersburg from an electrical perspective than they do today. Both provided key leadership and represented Petersburg very well. The results speak for themselves. Petersburg has some of the lowest power rates in the state. Reliability has increased throughout their tenure because they understood the intermixed generation and transmission system and were proactive and vocal in mitigating substantial risks. Diesel generation is almost non-existent. All these factors didn't happen by accident. They occurred because Dennis and Joe knew what they were doing. I understand that the reasoning behind the intended reorganization is to save money. Finding ways to have to save money should always be a goal of good management. However, it is folly to think you will save money by hiring a part-time replacement to run Power and Light, especially one with no electric utility experience. You need to heed the letter from the head electrician at Petersburg Fisheries. You need to heed the letter from Clay Hammer, Wrangell Light and Power's superintendent. You need to heed the letters from Don Koenigs and others who advise you not to make this move. If you don't have a superintendent who thoroughly understands the complexity and nuances of power generation, transmission, and distribution, along with the inherent risks wrapped up with the entire system, you are asking for trouble. Because SEPA owns the Tyee and Swan hydroelectric projects, you are tied at the hip with Wrangell and Ketchikan. This interconnected generation and transmission system is complex and not without substantial risk. You need to hire a superintendent who has the background and technical experience to fully understand this system. There has to be an ongoing high level of coordination between SEPA, the operators of the hydro projects, and the interconnected utilities, Wrangell and Ketchikan. You simply can't do this with a part-time utility director who does not have the requisite background. Sure, it's going to cost to hire someone with the qualifications needed to replace Joe Nelson. People with these qualifications are in high demand. Frankly, it won't make a dent on the overall finances of Petersburg Power and Light or the Petersburg City and Borough, for that matter. Petersburg businesses and residents rely on very affordable and reliable delivery and the reliable delivery of power. Don't be penny wise and pound foolish. I can assure you it will cost you in the long run if you continue down this ill-conceived path. Please contact me if you have any questions or want additional clarification. Sincerely, Dave Carlson. This is a letter from Robert Luer. Mayor Jensen, I have followed the restructuring debacle with interest and more than a little disbelief. Putting this plan forth under the unlikelihood that this will save us money borders on, for lack of a better word, absurd. We have police, fire, public works, electric, and administrative departments within the borough. All of these chief and superintendent positions have their own set of job skills, and no one person can do them all effectively. I would forecast another assistant at both the light department and public works. One person retires, two people get promotions and a raise, a real possibility of two new employees, and this saves the borough money how? In the private sector, other than the owner, you also have superintendents and foremen. These people are usually in that position because of knowledge and experience of the work at hand. Good ones are there to teach and mentor and will never ask those under them to do something they are not willing to do themselves. In short, you teach those under you to learn from your experiences and not to repeat your mistakes. You cannot impart knowledge you don't have to others. We all know that you have to pay big money for experience, but let us not forget that we could be paying real big money for the lack of of same without with one accident. Think about that one. Finally, Mr. Mayor, I haven't seen anything this disruptive in our local government since the Cabin Creek route selection. The people spoke then, and I'm sure they will on this matter. The Borough Assembly needs to remember that they are there at the will of the people to do the work of the people. Do your own personal axe grinding at home and cut your firewood there, not in assembly chambers. Personal agenda items have no place at assembly meetings. You people are the ones that approved the budget you now find yourselves working with and at this late date want to save money. Your next budget cycle will be here soon. Hopefully everyone will weigh the ramification of their vote. Sincerely, Robert Luer. This letter is from Wally McDonald, Fleet Refrigeration. Petersburg Borough Assembly. The other day, I listened on KFSK to Joe Nelson's comments during public testimony on the current proposal to reorganize the Power and Light Department. I greatly respect Joe's opinions and his point of view. As the owner of a licensed mechanical contracting business, I had a good working relationship with Joe for several years. We didn't necessarily agree on everything, but it has been essential to my business to be able to walk into Joe's office and get straight answers on technical issues regarding the local power grid. We both know the technical lingo, so we can get right to specifics on whether a proposed project is doable and how it should best be done. When time is of essence, as when an existing installation is failing, this sort of cooperation is vital to everyone involved. Several years ago, when the price of home heating oil began to climb, the electrical utility had unutilized capacity. When I had calls from customers to replace existing oil-fired heating systems that were nearing the end of their service life in homes and businesses, I was able to meet up with Joe, and he could tell me straight up if the location had adequate service that we could install electric-fired heat, if a neighborhood could support several electric-fired installations, and if and when upgrades to portions of the grid were planned, if three-phase industrial power was an option, and many other necessary details only someone with a technical background can answer. We also both saw what was coming. The more resistance electric heat installations installed, the more resistance electric heat installations installed, the less surplus power would be available, and the peak electric use shifted from summer to winter. Now, on the coldest day of winter, the draw on the power grid is greatest. This was about the time that advances in VFR technology and in-control systems made air source heat pumps feasible for this climate. I was able to go to Joe and share information, and as Joe was familiar with the technology and applications, we agreed on the advantages. He realized that the efficiency of these systems, which are electrically driven but draw far fewer amps than resistance electric systems, would allow installations without adding significantly to demand. So business and homeowners would not be faced with the costs of upgrading their individual services, and the grid would not be at risk of overloading. Recognizing the benefits and being familiar with incentives offered by other local electric utilities in many areas, he pushed to fund an incentive program to give homeowners cash rebates for installing these efficient systems. I recognize the city manager's efforts in trying to do what we hired him to do, in trying to find a path to balancing a budget during a flat spot in our natural resource-based local economy. We've all been through these cycles before. The future of our local economy is rooted in our infrastructure, and there isn't any part of that infrastructure that is more important than the electrical utility. You may somehow on paper show a short-term savings, but in the long run you risk lost opportunity in maintaining and improving our infrastructure. I hope the Assembly will give some weight to the testimony of several professionals in the mechanical and electrical trades on this issue. We'll respect your electrical department employees' concerns about safety, and you will instruct the city manager to make a more wholehearted effort at finding a qualified electrical superintendent. I've been following this issue through the Petersburg pilot for months. This is an issue which goes straight to my bottom line as a local business person, and I am annoyed that we are relitigating this when the will of the electorate in the last election was clear. Sincerely, Wally McDonald. And from Suzanne Wood. Mr. Mayor and members of the Assembly, my name is Suzanne Wood. The following comments are mine alone, a Petersburg Municipal Power and Light ratepayer. The PMP&L reorganization proposal, Ordinance 2018-10, and related municipal code changes before the Assembly are extensive and may be precedent-setting. Supporting a cost-sharing overhead-only scenario instead of hiring a qualified electrical supervisor for PMP&L may have unintended consequences that may affect the delivery of reliable and affordable electrical energy to Petersburg's commercial and residential ratepayers. Written and verbal communications, adherence to current industry standards and protocols, field experience, and ongoing training are paramount for operational safety. The ability for the design of our local electrical system improvements, which in large part should be most efficiently and cost-effectively accomplished by an in-house supervisor with extensive electrical experience, which in turn could reduce the otherwise total dependence on outside consultants. With the adoption of Ordinance 2018-10, it is difficult to envision a future where Petersburg will ever be able to hire a qualified electrical engineer as supervisor of PMP&L, when the job description would also require the management of the water and sewer utility departments. The skill sets and applicable experience required for one may not necessarily be easily conveyed to the other. Additionally, there exists separate union contracts. In closing, my 8 February 2018 Petersburg pilot letter to the editor summarizes my opinion. Quote, despite the borough assembly vote, I strongly support advertising for a successor for Joe Nelson, PMP&L's former electrical superintendent. The demands from an ever-expanding residential slash business slash tourism customer base, plus SEPA and Crystal Lake Hydro, are too important to relegate to a halftime public works dash PMP&L reorganization scenario. Relevant technical experience always matters. Unquote. Thank you for this opportunity to comment. Suzanne Wood.
Thank you, Debbie. Is there